You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Good morning. It is time to get up with the other Aaron, who right now might just be the most important one. Did the Rams win the Super Bowl in the first week of June? We're talking about it. Meanwhile, goading Green. Can the Celtics draw Draymond into taking himself out of the NBA Finals? We're talking Game 3. And then, are they scripting a Hollywood ending in La La Land for this star-crossed superstar? Or is it the biggest mistake the Lakers could make? Those are the questions. We've got the answers as we get up with you starting right now on a jam-packed Tuesday. Look at the squad we put together today. Diana's rolling. CJ McCollum is knocking down threes from everywhere. Oh, so is JJ Redick. Ninko needs a shirt guy. We'll talk about it later. Tim Hasselbeck is along this morning. Let's do it on this Tuesday. We start by going camping. A dozen teams opening mandatory minicamp today around the National Football League, and one of those is the defending Super Bowl champion LA Rams, who yesterday made that man, Aaron Donald, the highest paid non-quarterback in the history of the sport after a spring that was filled with talk of retirement. It's a rework deal. It brings the total value of Donald's contract to $95 million over 3 years. And so he becomes the first non-quarterback ever to cross over the $30 million per year salary mark. Only 11 quarterbacks currently make more than Donald does. And if you average out the top 10 highest paid quarterback and their average salaries, it comes out to only $9 million more than Donald's new figure. So he gets the huge money after the what seemed to be some flirting with retirement conversation. There's Tim Hasselbeck, but we'll start, Diana, with you. How close were we, and were the Rams more importantly, to losing Aaron Donald, and what is the significance of this yesterday?
There was never any question that Aaron Donald was returning to the Super Bowl champions roster. Look, this was contract posturing, essentially. This was him trying to build some leverage here. He had gone on many different podcasts talking about his health, how good he felt, how he feels younger than he's ever felt at just 31 years old. And we know how crucial he is to this Rams team. The Rams know this. He was at Sean McVay's wedding on Saturday, and McVay even revealed in an interview on Sirius Radio saying, I knew we were going to get this deal done. So there was never any concern, and we know how important he is to this team.
There's 95 million reasons why he feels so good. Come on, like I would be doing cartwheels right now, backflips, whatever it takes. There was no retire. He wasn't going to retire. Come on.
The
that
prime
was like
a, of his
that
career.
Was,
yeah.
That was a negotiation. Like, okay, I'm just going to retire.
Right? Because he's now the
95
richest.
95 mil.
He's the richest non-quarterback in pro football history.
And he
worked, and he's worth it.
He deserves it, yes. I mean, you saw it in the Super Bowl. He basically took over at the end of the game and won the Super Bowl for the Rams. So,
and in the NFC Championship game. If he doesn't put that pressure on Jimmy G, I don't even know if they're making it.
100%. So you look at a guy on that field, if you go into the game plan and you do not have two people for Aaron Donald, you are wrong. So he is that good, and he deserves every penny.
That last play you saw there, that was the play that won the Super Bowl. He actually made the last two plays of the Super Bowl and the last play of the NFC Championship game. So, Tim Hasselbeck, I'll come to you because Donald, you know, makes his career making guys like you uncomfortable. What does this mean? So he's back in the fold. He's got all the money. The Rams come back maybe better than before. What does this mean for the NFC?
They're a Super Bowl contending team with him, and without him, they weren't going to be. I mean, it's that simple. Listen, he's so disruptive. I think everybody here understands how disruptive he is when he is on the field and what that does for everybody else. Creates opportunities for other pass rushers, allows the secondary to play more aggressively. And I think that Diana and Rob were exactly right to bring up kind of the ability to close out football games. You know, when you talk about quarterbacks, you know, like how do they play in a critical moment when they're down? Well, look, pass rushers, like the elite pass rushers finish football games. They close them out. They end games. And Aaron Donald did it in the biggest moments a year ago. Like, that's really what matters for pass rushers, not a sack in a blowout game at the end of the half or something like that. It's how you close football games out, I think, that matters the most.
Yeah.
It's a really interesting point because we're so accustomed to Super Bowls being won by a last-second touchdown. This guy won the Super Bowl every bit as much as John Taylor or anybody else ever did. So what does this mean in the NFC? Now that we sort of see what the rosters are going to be, who's the favorite to win the NFC, Diana?
I spent so much time around Teddy that I know how difficult it is to repeat, but I've got the Rams. Despite the fact that Stafford led the league in interceptions and their defense only ranked 15th, I think they're even better now. They were still able to go on and win the Super Bowl. I think they'll do it again.
Ninko, I'm not even sure I should bother asking you, right? Obviously, you're going to take Brady.
Oh, yeah, you're the home guy.
Brady.
You're going with the Bucs. No, I'm not. I'm going with the Rams. I'm going with you on this one because you have to think about Stafford, right? First year in a new place, wins a Super Bowl. So now he's going to have that comfort level. He's not going to lead the league in interceptions this year, I guarantee it. The defense is going to be better. You got Aaron Donald as your leader. He's going to be there. So I'm going with the Rams. And don't have that weird look on your face because I didn't go with Tampa, okay?
I have a weird look on my face because you didn't go with Tampa. Who are you and what have you done with Rob Ninker? I'm getting a phone call right now. Tom Brady, in advance of his first workout today, is calling me saying, what the heck is Ninko talking about on here?
I didn't get any care packages from Tom, so.
You think Robin's studio, and this is what happens.
Hasselbeck, who is it? Who's the favorite in the NFC right now?
I think it's the Green Bay Packers, and I think a lot of people may be surprised because, you know, they lost Devontae Adams. But I think we're going to see a different-looking team in general. I think they're going to be better on defense. And offensively, I don't think they're going to be reliant so much on the passing game. They've got two outstanding backs, and I think we're going to see really a more balanced attack, which I think ultimately ends up being a more effective Aaron Rodgers when it matters the most late and quite honestly, in the postseason.
And I will go with Tampa, if only because Brady just called me. And, you know, he's very persuasive.
Yeah, he is.
I'm not sure how, if you've ever had that experience with him. But how do you bet against that guy? And how do you bet against a team that I think, if anything else, will come back hungry and ready and in a conference, basically, where most things are down and the Rams are trying to repeat and the Packers lost their best player? I will go with Tampa, Tom, going forward to next year. All right, more football as we go. But right now, we turn our attention back to the NBA Finals, and we'll play a game called Fact or Fiction. J.J. Redick, I'm starting with you. Fact or fiction, the Warriors are relying too much on Steph Curry.
That is absolutely fiction. You have to understand the Warriors rely on his gravitational pull at all times. He is the center of their solar system, and all the stuff that comes out of their offense, it's because of him. His movement, his pick and rolls, him putting pressure on the rim.
CJ McCollum, you're next. Fact or fiction, Jason Tatum needs to do more if the Celtics are going to win.
I think fiction. When you talk about doing more, I think it's all relative. I think he needs to do less.
Oh.
Less turnovers, less contested mid-range shots, more step-back threes, more assertiveness, more getting downhill, drawing the defense, kicking it out to the likes of Al Horford, the likes of Marcus Smart, as well as Derek White.
Okay, so I like the way you went there. You sort of crossed me up. It is both fact and fiction at the same time. Redick, how about this? Draymond Green deserved a second technical for that exchange with Jaylen Brown the other night. Is that fact or fiction?
I'm going to go with fiction on this. I think it was very annoying. Draymond can annoy people and get under their skin, but I didn't find it to be egregious. It was more annoying than anything else.
Okay, it's interesting. We were all sitting together. I was with the group from NBA Canton watching that. I can tell you in the building, they were scared to death. The fans in Golden State were scared to death that they were about to lose Draymond Green in the second quarter of a finals game. And with that thought in mind, Jeff Van Gundy was on the Low Post podcast yesterday, and this is what he said the Celtics should do to deal with Draymond Green. Listen.
You either have to come to the idea as a group that we're going to completely ignore Green, his antics and his disruptions, or we're going to confront him every single time he runs his mouth. I would try to get the earliest double T of all time. And then every time Green's running his mouth, turn and confront him.
So when he said earliest double T of all time, CJ, you sort of laughed over here. Why? What made you react that way?
I think you just have to play your game, honestly. I think you can't get too caught up in Draymond's antics. That's who he is as a person. That's who he is as a player. And when you're beginning to more so worry about him than the game, I think he's won.
Hold on one second there. So I wasn't here yesterday, but that doesn't mean I wasn't watching. And I thought I heard you say yesterday that if he gets a technical, that you and Dame Lillard would get together back in the day in Portland and say, okay, how are we going to get a second tee on this guy?
That's if he gets the first one.
Right. So you got to get it. Jeff just said, get that first one on him. Get that quick double tee.
If he gets the first one, then the likes of Grant Williams, they have to come into the game. And maybe you take a hard foul. Maybe you kind of send a message to him that, hey, I know you have a technical foul. You can toe the line if you want to, but understand that you can get thrown out, similar to how you did in 2016.
Are you talking trash? I mean, what exactly is it that gets him going? You've been on the court with him. What is it that pushes his button?
He loves it when you talk trash, but he loves it even more when you talk trash when you're behind. It's easy to talk when you're winning. It's like front running, you know what I'm saying? Like everything's going well for you. But if you're down in the game, maybe it's the third quarter and you're on that run, and you're still talking trash, I think he doesn't respond the same way that he has before.
How about it, JJ? Because these things have worked both ways for Draymond in the past. Obviously, they've won titles. He's made himself a Hall of Famer. He's also gotten suspended in the NBA Finals in the past. How are we handling this?
I think a bigger question is, how are we handling Steph Curry, honestly? The Celtics' attention should not be on Draymond Green. It should be on Steph Curry, specifically how we're guarding pick and rolls, drop coverage. He's averaging 1.7 points per possession. ISO's 1.8 points per possession. If you look for both teams in the half court, the three most effective plays are a Steph pick and roll, a Steph handoff, and a Steph ISO. They've got to figure Steph out. Draymond is the least of their concerns.
Right, is that now. Right? Because it does feel as though the energy and emotion that he creates does lift the rest of his team.
Yeah, but he's going to do that every game, Greeny. That's who he is. Yeah. As CJ said, that's who he is. That's what he brings into a game. And I thought he brought that at a very high level from the jump in game two. You were there, you know, first play of the game. He's tying up Al Horford at the top of the key, forcing a jump ball. You know, this is who he is as a player. That's not going to necessarily affect the scoreboard the way how you're guarding Steph Curry will affect the scoreboard.
That is a fascinating little graphic we have up there. You see, they win almost 8 out of every 10 games they play when he gets a technical foul. CJ, how should I react to that?
This is a wild stat. I've never seen a stat like this before. The fact that he has, you know, call it 28 technical fouls at least in games is mind-blowing. But he has to be careful because there is a point system in place depending on how many points he racks up for technical fouls.
Right. And
this series could go 7 games, and if that does, that could be a problem.
Well, JJ just said ignore him, or is that the word you used? How do you do that? When he's out there, he feels, I mean, I'm sitting all the way upstairs watching this thing, and I'm want to run down there and do something about it. How do you ignore him when he's being Draymond?
I think you kill him softly with your play, honestly. They have a chance at home to make a statement and go up 2-1. Jason Tatum could be aggressive early on. The role players will be more aggressive early on, be more comfortable. And I think that will speak more volumes than anything they can say to him because he's hurt it all.
Give me a final word on this, JJ. We'll get back to some other things. On Draymond, I mean, just pretending it's not happening doesn't feel realistic to me.
I think that stat is reflective of the fact when Draymond is ornery, the Warriors are better. And real quick, Greeny, I just want to give a shout out to my 7-year-old son, Knox Reddick. He had his first in-person piano recital last night.
Right.
He played a Bach piece and he absolutely crushed it. I just wanted to tell him, he's watching right now. I just wanted to tell him I'm proud of you, Knox.
Okay.
You killed it, bud.
Well done. I'm glad you snuck that right there in the middle of a Draymond conversation. That's well played.
I had to get it off, Greeny. I had to get it off.
Well done. The crew liked it. All right, so we got much more on the NBA Finals coming up, but hold on, we're also ready for the Stanley Cup Final, or at least we're halfway home. Avalanche looking to sweep the Oilers. Game 4 of the Western Conference Final last night, and here we go. We're tied at 4, just over 5 minutes to go, and the Avalanche are on a power play. Mikko Rantanen at the circle, the wrister, and it's good. Colorado, a 5-4 lead, and they could smell it. Just over 3 minutes left. Same score, we're on a rush. Leon Draisaitl is going to take the shot. And Zach Kassian is there, right place, right time, right result, a rebound goal. That's his second of the playoffs. Oilers tied at 5, and we're headed to overtime. And here we go, Connor McGahee, Altitude Sports Radio. Take it away.
Helm back from a car, lets it go, tipped on, rebound, score! It's Arturi Lehkonen, and you don't have to go home, but you can't stay here because this party is...
And it was. Even though the goal would be reviewed for a high stick, it has to be below normal shoulder height. You see, he's leaning over, so it appears it's below his normal height. Refs rule it a good goal, and the Avalanche are on their way. They end the Oilers season in overtime. They're on to the Stanley Cup Final for the first time since 2001. Meanwhile, tonight we've got Game 4 of the East Final. Rangers Lightning with New York up 2-1. Coverage from Tampa begins 8 Eastern right here on ESPN and on ESPN+. Coming up, the leader of the pack is back today after winning 2 straight MVPs. Could Aaron Rodgers actually elevate his game without Devontae Adams? We're talking about it. Plus, back to Draymond. Did he take another shot at Kevin Durant? Why does he keep talking about his former teammate? What the actual heck is going on here? It's Get Up on ESPN.
NBA fans, listen up. You've got to try Pick 6, the newest fantasy app from DraftKings, an official partner of the NBA. Getting started is simple. Select if a player will have more or less of a stat. For example, will a player have more than one rebound, or will a player have less than 3.5 assists? Pick your favorite players and compete for huge cash prizes. Download the new DraftKings Pick 6 app now using code PARLAY and take on the competition with your best NBA player picks. Only on DraftKings Pick 6 with code PARLAY. The crown is yours. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 18 plus in most eligible states. Age varies by jurisdiction. Eligibility restrictions apply. Pick 6 not available in all states, including but not limited to Connecticut and New York. For up-to-date lists of states, visit dkng.co/pick6states. Void where prohibited. See terms at pick6.draftkings.com/promos.
Delicious, meat nutritious, and the snack that packs a real protein punch. Wonderful pistachios, one of the highest protein nuts out there. Each one-ounce serving has 6 grams of protein, giving you over 10% of your daily value. Wonderful pistachios also come in a variety of flavors and sizes, perfect for enjoying with family and friends or taking them with you on the go. And you're on the go a lot, taking the kids to school, hopping from meeting to meeting, shopping for groceries. Well, the good news is, not only are Wonderful pistachios a complete protein, providing all 9 essential amino acids, they're also great for all your adventures. So whether you're a pistachio purist who loves cracking open every nut, or you prefer the convenience of no-shells pistachios, Wonderful Pistachios has got you covered. Grab Wonderful Pistachios and elevate your snacking game today. Visit WonderfulPistachios.com to learn more.
We're back and we're headed to Green Bay, and so is Aaron Rodgers. He will attend mandatory minicamp beginning today, but for the first time since 2013, he'll do it without Devontae Adams, who of course was traded out of Green Bay in March. Yesterday here on Get Up, Teddy Bruschi said Rodgers will not miss a beat without his longtime favorite receiver.
I know he's coming off back-to-back MVPs, but Aaron Rodgers, is he the quarterback that can now spread the wealth? Because Devontae Adams was his guy. Now I got to spread it around, and now I got to keep defenses on their heels because they don't know who I'm going to. I think Aaron's going to have a great year.
Fascinating. Why are you nodding your head?
Yes, he's going to have a great year. He's going to have a terrific year. Every year Aaron Rodgers has a great year, does he not?
Right. Yeah, but I think the thought is you don't have Devontae Adams, a receiver that he has trusted year in and year out. We saw those two do things together that has kept them alive in games. And you know the importance of that type of chemistry. Look at this catch, right, that he's able to make Adams to keep them in, or at least put them in field goal range there to help them win that game and be able to move up.
This is the play you're talking about,
But it's against the 49ers, which is probably the biggest catch, I guess, of the season last year, where they just are able to do things that you go, how? And I don't think we should downplay the loss of that. But that being said, it's Aaron Rodgers. He figures it out. And with that defense, I think they'll be able to.
Quickly, those videos we just showed you there were of him throwing to other people to demonstrate, I guess, that he can, because it wasn't always obvious that he could, because he always seemed to be looking for Devontae Adams. So I think it is reasonable to ask the question, not that he isn't going to be great. He's Aaron Rodgers. Of course he's going to be great. Let me get a quarterback in here real quick. Tim Hasselbeck. The idea that he's going to elevate or somehow be – the idea that he's not going to miss Devontae Adams strikes me as crazy. How does it strike you?
It doesn't strike me as crazy. Here's what I'd say, and Greeny, you know I've worn out this stat on your show. In the last 4 seasons, Aaron Rodgers has thrown 136 touchdowns and 15 interceptions. It's absurd. That type of production without turning the football over is absurd. And it's not because he's played with a great receiver. Has Devontae Adams been on the receiving end of some of those? Sure he has. But Aaron Rodgers also made Devontae Adams better. And he makes the other guys around him better. And so I think we're going to see a more balanced attack. I truly believe that Green Bay wants to look a little bit more like the Rams. You know, have a great defense, but also when you look at them offensively, have balance on offense, be able to run the football, be able to move the pocket, be able to do things. When you think about Matt LaFleur's, kind of experiencing the NFL and who he's been around, I think that's what he wants it to look like. And when a quarterback isn't there thinking, hey, I have to go to this guy, and coverage is dictating where the football goes, it can be a very good thing for the quarterback.
Yeah, the only thing I'll say is each of the last 5 seasons, Devontae Adams had double digits touchdowns, mm-hmm. receptions. I mean, all these touchdowns that Tim is talking about, Rob, a lot of them were caught by Devontae Adams. They didn't really replace him, at least not in any obvious way, to this point.
The more important aspect of the Green Bay Packers this season is going to be their defense. Because if they want to reflect the Rams and the way the Rams are built, what do the Rams have?
Yeah.
A pass rush. They have a pass rush. And to get to the quarterback, that's the bread and butter of any defense right now. And last year, the Green Bay Packers were at the bottom of the league when it comes to getting to the quarterback. So if they want to be a better team and get farther in the playoffs and get to a Super Bowl, it's got to start on defense.
Yeah, and the last time the Green Bay Packers won the Super Bowl, they had the number two ranked defense in the league. Since then, the best defense they had was like 9. Mm, yeah. So it's been a while since they had a top ranked defense. And it just goes to show you, obviously, how important that's going to be, knowing without that key weapon, they're going to need to rely on that defense.
Look, this is a team that for the previous two seasons were in the NFC Championship game. Last year, they were the one seed in the NFC. Taking one step forward when losing your second best player sounds like a difficult thing to do. In the meantime, Danny, you have to see this. Okay. All right, because this happened on planet Earth yesterday. It's actually in a place called Gloucester, England. It's the Cooper's Hill Cheese Race. This is a spring event that takes place every year since 1826. Some say it started as a pagan ritual centuries ago. Others believe it was an effort to maintain grazing rights. Either way, it is a spectacularly stupid thing to do. It is 200 yards to the bottom of a hill where people are gathered to be quote unquote catchers. Injuries, needless to say, are extremely common. So we put together just sort of a panel of what I consider to be sensible people here.
Yeah.
JJ, what would it take? How would I talk you into doing this? Just rolling down this hill in the interest of a wheel of cheese.
The prize would have to be at least six figures, first of all. My question, though, is how do you train for this? Are there certain stretches, or is there a strategy for rolling down the hill to prevent injury?
You throw yourself off a building, essentially.
Training for this is clearly drinking as much alcohol as you possibly can.
The crackers at the bottom of the hill with a little wine, I'd go after
that's
that
all
cheese.
You need. I saw this cheese. And I was thinking, I've chased after grosser things in my 20s, but it's still, I don't know how good that cheese is for this guy, but to be willing to do that?
Don't you need a helmet for this?
These people. Painful.
You think you guys are tough being premier athletes?
Wow.
If these are people that had ever worn a helmet, they wouldn't be participating in this thing.
That's true. Right? That's true.
This is how you make the Pro Bowl better. This is what we do next year.
This is
how we go with it.
JJ, which NBA player would be likeliest to do this? Of all the players you played against in the NBA, which one would be most likely to just hurl themselves down a hill for
no obvious
reason?
Again, it just depends on the prize, but I'd say Marcus Smart, Pat Beverly. They're going down that hill.
And look, pagan ritual, I don't know exactly what to say about it, except it's the most ridiculous thing I've ever seen any collection of people do in my life.
I would try it.
I think you would.
I think I would. I mean, it looks kind of, I mean, as long as you don't.
My question is, how are they getting so much pace? Is it that
steep? You got to be able to roll. You got to tuck and roll.
It's gravity. They're just hurling themselves down a steep
hill. Like, they're just throwing their bodies that way.
A little bit of core strength involved.
Yeah, there's core strength. Forget Pilates. This is the new exercise of 2022.
All right, we'll see. By no means should anyone be trying this at home. In the meantime, did Draymond Green take another shot at Kevin Durant? JJ, why does he keep talking about his former teammate? What the actual heck is going on here? We'll get to the bottom of this. Plus, can the Lakers run it back with Russ, their new coach, unveiling his plan for Westbrook? And wait till you see who had a front row seat. Could this actually work? We're talking about it. It's Get Up on ESPN.
Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
We are back on Get Up, and of course the NBA Finals are tied at a game apiece. Let's check in on how the biggest stars are doing. Been sort of a tough debut finals for Jason Tatum. He shot 3 of 17 in game 1, then had a plus minus of minus 36 in game 2, which was the worst in any game in his career. As for Klay Thompson, he's really struggling from the floor, shooting 30% in the series, 4 of 19 in game 2, 1 of 8. From three-point range. Steph Curry, meanwhile, has picked up the slack. He leads all players with 63 points, and he has held opponents to 5 of 18 shooting on the defensive end. Here's Draymond Green with more on the great Steph Curry.
Our offense is always a lot of Steph. It all starts with Steph. Whether, you know, when KD was here, our offense still started with Steph. And, you know, that's the way it's going to be.
So he says that, and of course, everyone immediately starts texting me, Greeny, he brought up KD again, Greeny, he brought up KD again. Now, that actually sounds, as you hear it, like sort of, that did not sound like he was trying to take a shot necessarily at Kevin Durant, no. The way he said it there. How did you interpret that?
I thought he was just providing context right. For how the Warriors have always played with Steph Curry, and they have publicly said this. Steve Kerr talked about this about halfway through that first year with Kevin Durant. They realized in December of that year, oh my gosh, we need to actually involve Steph more, because Kevin Durant is, to me, like the ultimate plug-and-play guy. You don't need to necessarily call plays for Kevin. Kevin's going to go get 30. Mm-hmm. That's just how good he is. He does it all within the context of whatever offense you're running. And I didn't see this in any way as Draymond taking some sort of shot at Kevin Durant.
Did you, CJ?
I didn't think he was taking a shot, because I actually believe that he truly believes everything that he says is true,
right.
Regardless of whether or not it is. But I think historically, Kevin Durant's name has been coming up because he's a great player. And a lot of times, I think the Warriors feel slighted on those championships, because a lot of people bring up KD's presence, what he did, and how essentially he's the reason why they won, and they feel like they're a team. But I think when he brought up the fact that he believes Steph was double-teamed 7 times as much as KD, mm-hmm. I thought that was a little much. And I don't know if that was for clicks, but I'm going to ask Dre about that specifically, because even if he believes Steph was double-teamed more, there's no way it was 7 times more, because as JJ referenced, KD averages 30 a game for his career in the finals. He is the guy who can create and manufacture points better than anyone I've seen.
What's interesting, there is clearly something there, right? I mean, Draymond and Kevin, we saw it. We saw it bubble over at one point while they were teammates in a very obvious and public way. And it all sort of, it manifested itself to wherever it manifested itself. So there is some history there, whether he meant it this way or not. We're now in a place where every time he mentions Kevin Durant's name, immediately the antenna go up.
Absolutely. Now we're kind of clocking it, right? Every time it's brought up, and I think a reporter pointed out that they specifically asked him about Kevin Durant when he mentioned the fact that the offense has historically revolved around Steph. I don't think that was a shot. I think that was matter of fact. Like, the offense has to revolve around him, because KD can go get 30 without a play being called for him. Steph is obviously a great player, all-world player, but he's 6'3". So you have to kind of give him space, give him opportunity, be mindful of where he's at all times to make sure that he's constantly involved in the action. But I think all in all, they both have a mutual respect and love for each other. They won championships together, and obviously there was some discretion at points in time throughout their career with the obvious interaction they had on the bench that one time. But I think it's being overblown. I don't think Kay is really tripping. I'll have to ask him in the group chat. Shout out to the group chat.
Fair enough. That's a group chat I'd like in on, by the way. I don't want to contribute. I just would like to read the things that go back and forth.
This is not for the world to see.
I had a feeling. So, JJ, how about it? I mean, at the end of the day, are they better off this way? No one is better not having Kevin Durant on their team, but there does feel like there would be something in the historical record if they win it before they had him, and then they win it with him, and then they win it after he leaves. It does feel as though if you're looking for some way to elevate those three guys, the three members of the core of Golden State, that would be the ticket.
Oh, for sure. And look, I think regardless of how people feel about those Kevin Durant Warriors teams, the legacy of Steph and Klay and Draymond is secure. Like, these guys, to make 6 finals in 8 years, to have the Hall of Fame career that they've all had, they are going to have a legacy. The reality is, look, Kevin Durant was the best player on those Warriors teams. And if you go look at those finals, Steph was awesome. Draymond talked about this last week. Steph was fantastic. In 17, they were 16-1 in that playoff run. Kevin Durant was the first player since Shaq in 2002 to score 30 in every game of the finals. And in both 17 and 18, he hit key buckets down the stretch of those back-breaking games against the Cavaliers.
But
it was almost like it was, I mean, you were out there competing against them, obviously, so you would know better. It was almost unfair, right? When you take a team that was already that good and you take out nothing, you don't trade for them, you just get Kevin Durant, you just add maybe the greatest scorer that ever lived. It almost felt like the whole thing was unfair. So whether KD or Steph was the best player, the whole thing felt something like a cheat code. Was it that way when you played against them?
Yeah, I mean, I was disappointed in him for doing that. And I told him about it, and he kind of laughed and was like, I had a right of free will. He can do what he wants. And I respected the fact that he made that decision knowing people would be angry at him because of how good the Warriors were. But also, I think it challenged him to play a different type of game, and I think JJ referenced it. He was a plug-and-play, right? He had to learn a new system. He had to play alongside great players, and I think he became a more well-rounded basketball player, and that's what we're seeing now. But obviously, I was on vacation reading, and I was like, this can't be serious. I had lost to the Warriors before he got there. Obviously, we ended up losing once he got there, but I think, as JJ referenced, there's no debates about who was the best player on that team. We know it was Kevin Durant. Steph knows it was Kevin Durant. Dre, deep down, he knows it was Kevin Durant, and obviously, Kay knows he was the best player on that team as well.
Well, that's interesting. Okay, let's put a little bookmark in that. We can come back to it as we continue because, you know, as far as historical greatness, I think that's become something of a question during this series. In the meantime, let's look specifically at these finals, and we'll play over-under here. So, CJ, for Steph in Game 3, will he go over or under 39.5 combined points, rebounds, and assists?
I think that's an easy over. That's basically 25-5-5. He's averaging, you know, he had 29 in the game, he had 34 in the game, 21 and a quarter. He's coming out guns blazing, understanding that a lot of conversations are being had behind closed doors about who is going to win this MVP since he hasn't won a Finals MVP yet.
All right, right now he would be trending toward that. JJ, how about Clay? He's really been struggling. Over under 19.5 points.
I'm going to take the over on this. I think as a shooter, we always talk about being due and some sort of regression to the mean, and I think Clay is one of those guys right now that is due. The other reason I think that he's due for a big game is because I do think at some point the Celtics have to make an adjustment on their coverage with Steph Curry, and I would expect them at some point to double-team him a little bit. He's just been too good going one-on-one and playing against drop coverage, and that will open things up for guys like Clay and Andrew Wiggins.
And then, CJ, let's go to Tatum. Will he go over or under 27.5 points as they go home for Game 3?
I'm taking the over. I remember playing on the road versus at home, you're obviously a little bit more aggressive, you're more comfortable. He's had a couple games to settle in and kind of figure out where he's going to pick his spots at. We've referenced, you know, cutting out some of those long contested two-point shots. I think he'll be more aggressive getting downhill, but also take more three-pointers, which is, as JJ knows, more points per possession for him. Yeah. And that step back is virtually unstoppable. He can get to that whenever he feels like
it. We'll see. He was knocking down shots the other night. That wasn't the problem, but clearly everything just fell apart for them in the second half, as so often they do. We'll see what happens tomorrow night, Game 3 of the NBA Finals will be on ABC, tip off 9 Eastern. It's also on ESPN Deportes and ESPN Radio. We will start your night with NBA Countdown, 8:30 Eastern. That's tomorrow night on ABC. In the meantime, other basketball news. We shift gears to the Lakers. Yesterday, they introduced their new head coach. That's Darvin Ham, who, of course, was asked about, among other things, Russell Westbrook's role on the team. Listen to what he had to say.
Don't get it messed up. Russ is one of the best players our league has ever seen, and there's still a ton left in that tank. I don't know why people tend to try to write him off.
So I know why people try to write him off. What did you make of that and of the overall notion of Westbrook continuing there into whatever this new iteration is?
Well, Darvin Ham has a job to do, and that's to figure out how to make LeBron, Anthony Davis, and Russell Westbrook fit together. And we talked all the time this past season about how awkward of a fit is it. And I've said this multiple times this season. They got the player they traded for. This was not a different version of Russ. If you look at all of his numbers outside of the counting stats, the points per game, obviously his usage rate is going to go down with LeBron James. He shot the same percentage virtually at every spot on the basketball floor that he had shot before. And then towards the end of the season, you could see his confidence waning a little bit, and he was pressing, and he was trying to figure it out. He's still a really good basketball player. Let's be very clear on that. When I think about the Lakers, I don't think about the big three. Certainly they need to be healthy. They need to figure out how to play together. I think about 4 through 8. I think about those roster pieces. Last year they played with a bunch of guys who hadn't been good since 2016. And you can't win in the NBA without all the ancillary pieces.
Well, you played them when you were in New Orleans in the first game that Anthony Davis came back, if I'm remembering that correctly. So you did see them theoretically whole and before they didn't even make the play-in tournament. What was your perspective on all this?
Well, I like the highlights that you guys are showing right now, so let's kind of check that out and get to the floater right here. Oh no, step, pull up, bang. I think the biggest thing that I noticed is that they weren't healthy. Obviously, everyone's talking about Russ's play. They're talking about Bron. They're talking about AD, how they didn't get a lot of games together. I think that's going to make all the difference. Success is virtually determined by how well you collectively get along, cohesiveness, trust, understanding of each other, and it's health. They didn't have all three of those. They weren't healthy, so it was hard for the cohesiveness to come together. AD's an all-world player. We all know that. He's very talented. But if he's not available, it's hard for them to be successful. And I think they've seen that. They had a lot of injuries, guys coming in and out of the rotation. I think that changed the game. But Russ's numbers, when Bron didn't play, were very, very similar to his numbers in OKC.
Yeah, and one point on this regarding the health thing. Like, I agree with you, CJ. Like, they need Anthony Davis to play 72 to 75 games. They need LeBron to play 72 to 75 games, Russ to play 72 to 75 games. My question is, with their skill sets, who are the other two pieces you are putting around them? Are you playing Anthony Davis at the five? Are you playing him at the four? He was not a good and efficient jump shooter last season. So you need either a stretch five or you need two dead-eye knockdown shooters and Anthony Davis playing the five and maybe some LeBron playing the five. That's ultimately what's going to make Russ at his best, is putting more shooting around him. That's what the Houston Rockets did. He had the same awkward fit when he first got there. And remember, they traded away Clint Capella. They put P.J. Tucker at the five. They opened up the floor. That's ultimately what the Lakers are going to have to do if they want to be a good basketball team next year.
Can it work? Can it work with I mean, very simply, can Russell Westbrook and LeBron James be on the same team doing the things that they do at this stage of their lives? They're not changing their games and have it work in a big way.
I think it's going to be tough because they're both ball dominant players. Someone has to continue to work towards getting off the ball. And I don't know what that looks like for them. Obviously, Russ historically rebound. He can start the break. Bron can rebound and start the break. But Ham talked about running a four out, you know, four out, one in. Mm-hmm. Who's the one in? Is it AD? And who's going to be the four out, essentially having the ball? I know there was issues on who's the point guard, who's going to bring it up, things of that nature. But I think they have to stagger the minutes, kind of work out ways to allow Russ to be the best version of himself. Otherwise, it's going to be hard for this to work.
Did you see he was there yesterday? Yeah.
I just want to be clear on this. And see, I just want to be crystal clear on this. I really believe this, and CJ has alluded to this. I have alluded to this. I don't think last season was an indictment on Russell Westbrook, the basketball player. I think last season was an indictment on a terrible fit. I want to be very clear on that.
I agree with you, but I would go further. It doesn't get better. Like, there is no fit between those two guys that work. If you came here, you're a magnificent addition to this show. But if you came here and the best thing you did was read in and out of the commercial breaks, I would say, no, we don't need that. I do. Well, we already have someone to do that. Do you understand what I'm saying? They already have someone who does all the things Russell Westbrook does, yeah. And then they went out and got someone else who does it. It doesn't make
any
sense.
Which is why I'm saying, unless you put the next four or five guys be the perfect fit to outweigh this awkward fit, you're not going to be a top three or four team in the West.
Shooting is a priority in this league. So yeah. If you're going to have two guys who love to penetrate, who love to play in the same spaces, Dame and I played in a lot of the same spaces, but we both could shoot. I think shooting is the ultimate separator. So people have to get more comfortable with either catching and going like the San Antonio Spurs do to create more space and driving angles, or they have to work on catch and shoot opportunities. And I think that's what you're seeing as one of the issues is the spacing, because they're all playing in the same space. And you referenced AD shooting last year. He didn't shoot particularly well from three, and I think that clogged it up a little bit as well.
All right, hold that thought. JJ is going to take us in and out of break as we continue in just a moment. Coming up, Steph is carrying the Warriors. What is wrong with Klay? Can Golden State win the championship with only half a splash? We'll talk about that and more. Plus, back to football, the one big reason Lamar should stay home until he has all his money. That and more on the way. This is Get Up on ESPN.
Tired of ads interrupting your favorite sports podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts. Enjoy shows like First Take, Pardon the Interruption, and The Low Post, available ad-free and uninterrupted. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or go to amazon.com/ESPNpods. That's amazon.com/ESPNpods to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
All right, we are back on Get Up, and let's see if we can tell right from wrong. I will make a statement, and you guys will tell me whether that statement is right or wrong. And Rob Ninkovich, I'm starting with you. If I were to say Bill Belichick is better off just calling the offensive plays himself, right? Would that be right or wrong?
Right.
Because at this point, why not? Why not? Bill Belichick has done it all. He's been a special teams coordinator. He's been the DC. He's going to be, the OC. He's going to do it all. He does contracts. He does a salary cap. Why not? He's going to have a statue outside of Gillette one day.
Oh, yeah. He's going to have a statue outside of that part of it I don't disagree with. We'll put a pin in that when we may come back to it. In the meantime, Diana, if I were to say the AFC West is so tough, the Broncos are going to miss the playoffs even with Russell Wilson, would that be right or wrong?
You're very wrong on this Tuesday morning. It must be that long flight from San Francisco, Korea, because Russell Wilson has been revived. He's rejuvenated. I'm not sure if you've been following along some of the reports coming out of Denver, but he looks sharp. I think this is going to be the best version of Russell Wilson that we've seen, and I think they are definitely going to be making the playoffs.
Ooh, okay.
Why'd I add that definitely? But they are.
Fair enough. Tim, let me come to you then. If I were to say Lamar Jackson should stay at home until he has a new contract signed, sealed, and delivered, would that be right or wrong?
That'd be wrong. Look, here's the deal. If you're a good player and you're a quarterback and you end up playing on the franchise tag, you make more money than everyone else. Since 2016, when Kirk Cousins played on the franchise tag, made $159 million since that point, more than any other player in the NFL. Since 2020, when Dak Prescott played on it, he's made $106 million, and he got hurt, you know, in that situation. So, no, I think Lamar should show up and play, and if he plays on the franchise tag, he'll make a lot of money. And you know, hat tip to Hembo on some of those stats there.
Well, it's a fascinating one because it is sort of conventional football player wisdom, Ninko. You don't set foot on a field. You don't put yourself in harm's way, all the rest of that without the contract. But Tim is making a real point, which is particularly with the quarterbacks, that has changed in recent years. What do you think?
Listen, it's tough because you know there's risk involved. You go out there and like Dak, you saw him get hurt. But guess what? He still got paid because he's so talented.
Example,
you know, I think if you're in his position right now, you know the market has just continued to climb for these quarterbacks. So he's just sitting back like, when am I going to get paid? I'm going to get paid. Just how much am I going to get?
And Rob, just look how he's been doing this. We know that he's essentially representing himself. And by being patient, this has worked to his advantage because normally, right, we would be talking about this, let's say, 6 months ago. I bet you if you were sitting across from me, you'd be like, sign the deal, man. Take it. But look at all the quarterbacks that have been paid since.
Yeah.
So now the market sets what he's going to make, and that has now changed. And really it's going to come down to what the Baltimore Ravens want to pay him at this point. We know he's dynamic. We know that they've tailored their entire team, their offense, to Lamar Jackson's style of play. He's the guy. Where's the leverage for them?
Well, where's the holdup then? I mean, this is the part of this that I've been wanting to ask as I'm traveling and I'm watching the show and I get it. Everyone, why is this taking so long? What is the reason that he does not have a contract yet?
When you have a quarterback like Lamar Jackson who's able to accomplish and do the things that he does, we call him a magician all the time, highlight after highlight after highlight. The one thing that has to be concerning for this Baltimore team is perhaps being able to stay healthy, knowing he relies so much on his legs. Can he pass? Yes, he can pass. But we know what his strengths are. Those are his legs. And I think there's got to be a little bit of weariness from the Ravens organization looking at this going, we're going to pay him this much money, but are we really, you know, is this worth the risk?
What's the answer to that, Tim Hasselbeck? You're talking about how it is worth the risk on his side to hold it out. If it doesn't get everything he wants, play on the franchise tag, he probably wins that scenario. I get that. How about the other side? Is there a risk involved in this for Baltimore?
Yeah, of course there's, Greeny. Just to kind of get back to what you just asked Diana, you know what the holdup is? Deshaun Watson. Plain and simple, guys. I mean, let's just be real. If you are Lamar Jackson, why on earth would you take a penny less than what Deshaun Watson just got from the Cleveland Browns to reset the market? Five years, $230 million, fully guaranteed. Mm. If I'm Lamar Jackson, here's the deal. This is how it works. Listen, it's 5 years, $231 million minimum, fully guaranteed. Like, end of story. Like, that's where we are starting if I am Lamar Jackson. So, like, look, that's... The market was reset, and this guy doesn't have some of the same issues that Deshaun Watson has. And so, look, if you want to talk about the holdup, the market was reset, and if you were Lamar Jackson, you would be crazy to ignore the deal that was just done by the Cleveland Browns.
Yeah, to add to what Tim is saying, right? He's painting a picture of the guaranteed money. By Lamar waiting, the guaranteed money, the number was around $84 million with Kirk Cousins.
Right.
It's now $230 million.
Mm. Right.
Just by waiting, look how much
I would
money.
Pay him. I'd pay him because he's that talented. If I'm the Ravens, my team is set up for him, and we've built it all around him. Let's pay him.
The
Let's
bottom line
forward.
Is they have to whether they want to or not.
Yes.
There's no other alternative. I continue to struggle to figure out why this is taking this long for everyone involved to figure it out. We'll see. In the meantime, as we continue this morning, we told you mandatory minicamps are beginning all over the league. Tom Brady is about to take the field this morning, but there's one big absence from his camp that could cost him a Super Bowl. We'll see it live next. Get up on ESPN.